from WXXI News. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in February when the University of Rochester made an announcement about research into aging. Specifically, researchers found that a protein might help ward off cancer. The test subjects seem to have a unique ability to stop cancer. Just imagine if this could be extended to all of us. Of course, the test subjects were not humans, but instead the naked mole rat. You might have heard of this creature, which is almost certainly the ugliest living thing on Earth, but also potentially one of the most valuable to scientists. And so now we want to know how much of what we can learn about cancer and aging in the naked mole rat could apply to us. Tonight, the Rochester Museum and Science Center is hosting another lecture in its Science on the Edge series. The subject is aging research in search of the fountain of youth. And my guest for the hour is the person who will be offering that presentation. It's at 7:30 tonight at the Rochester Museum and Science Center, Dr. Vera Gobanova, who is a professor of biology at the University of Rochester. Nice to have you back in studio. How are you?
Hello. It's my pleasure to be here.
Well, we're going to talk about the naked mole rat, but much more than that this hour. And for our listeners, when the subject of aging research came up on Twitter this morning as we got ready for this program, some of our listeners on Twitter got into an interesting conversation, a little bit of a back and forth on whether you'd want to live 150 or 200 years if you could. And we have some interesting responses to that. We'll get to that. Dr. Gorbanova, if you could live 200 years right now, if I offered you 200 years, would you take it?
Absolutely, I would take it. And it's important to stay healthy for these 200 years.
Sure.
So assure the good health. Yes, absolutely. There is so much you can do in life.
Would you take 500?
Oh, yes.
You would see there has to, there are diminishing returns eventually, aren't there? I don't know. I think I share your enthusiasm for it. I love getting up in the morning and contributing to the world. It'd be fascinating to see. But this is an interesting starting point. Are there ethical considerations to trying to extend human life?
I think this is a very desirable outcome right now, especially in developed world. Birth rates are going down. They're extremely low now in many developed countries. So now there are very few young people and more older people. So really what the society needs is to make those people live healthier life and productive lives for as long as possible.
Well, I think I'd take 200. I don't know if I would take any much more than that. And I'm trying to be an optimist. But we're going to talk about the various ways we might see aging extended with Dr. Gorbanova, who has been involved with research at the University of Rochester for how long now?
It's 11th year now that I'm here.
And how long, when did you first meet a naked mole rat?
About 7 years ago. So we were interested in many different species of mammals because of that variety of lifespans we can find. There are some rodents, for example, mice and rats, they only live, say, 3 years, maybe four at the most. And there are also rodents that live much longer. I think the one that's most familiar to everybody is a gray squirrel that you can see in parks and your backyards. So if this squirrel is kept in good conditions and no predators or cars around, it can live over 20 years. So the record currently is 24. So I was fascinated by this diversity of how long animals can live. And then we explored even longer lived rodents, and naked mole rat has a record in this regard because it can live over 32 years.
Over 32 years. And for our listeners, if you can right now, you've got to Google naked mole rat and do an image search. But don't be eating. It is not a pretty picture. It is unfortunate. Nature hasn't chosen it for a beauty contest, right, Dr. Gorbanova?
Well, you know, I tend to disagree. I think they're very cute animals. If you just look at still pictures, yes, they have very unusual appearance. But if you, you know, maybe Google some movies, there are many zoos that have colonies of naked mole rats. So if you see these animals in motion, they're very cute, beautiful, very functional.
See, well, different. Your mileage may vary on the cuteness of this animal, but it has been a great valuable research item because if they're living to, it can live, you said, to 32 years.
Yes.
Is there an average age for a naked mole rat lifespan?
Well, what's interesting about them, they all seem to almost not age. So if you look at population of mice, so you could say, well, maximum is somewhere between 3 and 4 years, but then many mice would get frail and sick when they're age 2. or even younger. With naked morats, it's different. The whole population is very uniform. They don't age. They stay fit almost to the very end.
And the very end for them is, because you said mice are 2 to 4 years. That's it for mice?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, very short-lived.
And naked mole rats, but is there an average then?
Average would be over 20.
Over 20.
Yeah.
Over 20. And they're not that far removed from their cousin, the average mouse, right?
Well, they're about as far as mouse is from guinea pig.
Okay. What did you find out when you started researching 7 years ago? I imagine the first questions were, why? What about this animal is allowing it to live so long? Was that the first question, or how did you kind of go into research with this?
Yes, absolutely. So that's the big question. And we were not even sure how to address it. So you have this creature, it has this amazing longevity. So where do we start? So we started by looking, you know, taking small biopsies of their cells, culturing, and looking how these cells behave. And then the next amazing feature of naked mole rats is that they don't get cancer. So again, by looking at their cells, we could get some clues about that.
When did you know early on these animals don't get cancer? Was it clear?
Yes, that was clear because large colonies of these animals were kept in laboratories to study their behavior mostly. And people noticed that, well, these things don't die. So then researchers of aging got interested too.
And so no cancer. What do they die of? Other ailments, I guess?
It's not very clear. They seem to die of various causes, though there is no single cause of death. I could say about our colony, it's relatively young. So we only had one animal that was aged 28 who passed away. He had some problem with the liver, which again could be anything.
But not cancer?
Not cancer, absolutely. So there is no single cause. It just, they get old.
And for a mouse, for example, that's living 2 to 4 years, how common is cancer?
Cancer, especially in laboratory mice, is extremely common. Could be up to 90% of them.
That many.
Yes.
So there's never, have you ever seen any naked mole rat with cancer?
Oh, absolutely not.
Not even one?
We haven't seen that, no.
Okay. So, all right. So now you've identified this fascinating aspect of these animals. I guess you start trying to answer the question, why? How come they never, is it that they never get cancer or that they get cancer and their body defeats it? You know, I don't even know if that question
That's a very
sense.
Good question. What we, you know, from our research, we can speculate that maybe a very small pre-malignant lesions may arise, but then their body doesn't allow them to grow further. Although we haven't really identified such lesions, it's just from our observations of cells and culture we can say that. But it's possible they have multiple defenses. You know, first line of defense that doesn't allow such lesions to even take place, but if few cells, rogue cells, escape, then they have the other line of defense to not allow them to grow.
And when it comes to this research, I know our listening audience will say, very interesting, but a naked mole rat is not a human being. And when do we start to feel like there are actual parallels? So as a researcher, as a scientist, tell us why this research can eventually have an impact for us.
Oh, well, I'm very optimistic that it can be useful and applied to human beings. So we have a success story. The first breakthrough we had while looking at naked mole rat cells is we understood one mechanism that protects them from cancer. And the key there was a molecule, which is, it's not a protein, it's a polysaccharide. It's like a long chain of sugar that accumulates under the skin and in multiple organs. So humans also have that molecule. It's important to keep our skin elastic. And it's also in the knees, in the brain, in blood vessels. So it's called hyaluronan. But in naked mole rats, it's different. So it's this long chain of sugar, but in naked mole rats, it's like 6 to 10 times longer than in human. And this molecule stops premalignant cells from growing. And what's amazing, once we figured that out, we also found that not the same molecule, shorter version of it, has actually been used in the clinic already, not to fight cancer, It's used in a filler in surgery. It's used in eye surgery. It's used, as a dressing for burn victims. So it can be applied to humans. So, to answer your questions, yes, it's very realistic to actually take something we learned from naked mole rats and directly apply to people.
Okay. I think the last time we were on this program with you, we talked about hyaluronan and possible benefits to human beings. But what kind of sample size? What kind of trial? I mean, every researcher wants more funding and needs more funding. And I think that may be a broader discussion in general on whether there is enough funding for aging research and anti-aging research. But let's start there. Are you at the stage now where we can, measure this in a statistically significant and meaningful way in human beings?
So any treatment, of course, first has to go through preclinical stage where we tested in animals, like in mice. So we made a genetically modified mouse, a transgenic mouse, that has the gene for making naked mole rat hyaluronan. So now we have these mice. What we can say, the mice are fine, so it's not toxic to them. It doesn't create a problem. But we will test whether it protects them from cancer. Maybe it makes them live longer. And once we have this proof, so then we can really think about moving into humans.
Okay. What do you want? What would be the ideal for you next in terms of research?
Well, so there are many directions. And again, your second part of your question was funding, which is essential for any progress in science. So there are lots of things we could do. We can research, go more applicable ways, see how exactly to use it in humans, what's the best way to administer it, how we can maybe make human cells make more hyaluronan to protect people from cancer. We also are interested in mechanisms, how exactly hyaluronan works. Just in the last few months, we got clues that hyaluronan may be helping longevity through a completely different mechanism that we, additional way. So we are exploring that. So there are many, many directions. Of course, each one needs funding. And unfortunately, funding for aging research is not where I think it should be these days. So if we compare how much National Institute on Aging receives compared to other parts of the National Institute on Health, it's very, very small. Pay lines for investigators grants. So let's say if I write a grant and submit it, so the chance of it being funded is about 7%. So you can imagine how...
When you write a grant and submit it?
Yes.
Your chances of getting funded are 7%? Is that right?
Yes. Yeah, it just doesn't make much sense, I would say, because there are many, many good grants that are submitted, not only mine, but there are many other people with great ideas. And if only 7% of them can get funded, so it really limits the progress. And I think aging research now is really something worth investing for. It's where the future is, because so many diseases... I would say most diseases, except childhood diseases, are diseases of age. So if we can learn how to slow down aging, we could take care of almost all the diseases at once.
We're talking to Dr. Vera Garbanova, who is a professor of biology at the University of Rochester. Tonight at 7:30 p.m., she is presenting at the Rochester Museum and Science Center. It's part of their Science on the Edge speaker series. And the doors open at 6:30, 7:30 tonight for that presentation called Aging Research in Search of the Fountain of Youth. And we've got some of your questions that have come in via email and Twitter. We'll try to get to those. And some Dr. Garbanova might say, not my area, and some you might feel ready to jump in on, and that's great. But if you have any comments or questions on the science of aging, research, etc., we'd love to hear from you. 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. Or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. We open the hour with that question. How long would you live if you could? I had a scientist told me last year, if any of us can live another 40 years, we will all live at least another 120 years. I don't know if that's overly optimistic, but Dr. Garbanova, what do you make of that comment? If we can live another 40 years, we will all live at least another 120. And that science will progress to a point where we can eliminate or prevent what is killing us
Well, I am optimistic that the lifespan can be extended. It's difficult to say by how many years
sure.
and in what period of time. That would be very rough speculation. But I think it can. And, you know, I believe in it. Otherwise, why would I be doing what I'm doing? I think it's interesting to look into how lifespan and aging changed over time. Like, humans used to live much, much shorter, but within the past century or so, people started to live a lot longer, and mostly due to improved hygiene, invention of antibiotics, so now we are not dying of infections as we used to. But now we are kind of at a stall. So humans in developed world live into their 80s and maybe 70s, but the absolute maximum that we know of is 122. So there was a French lady that lived that long. And to kind of get beyond that age, we really need to use science, because we probably exhausted what the, you know, potential for improvement we could achieve just by hygiene and treating infectious diseases. So now we need something else. Now we need to change the way we age.
And on that number, you mentioned the way the human lifespan has changed. Where are we now? I think men are just south of 80 and women are north of 80 as an average. Is that something like that?
Yes, for United States and other like European countries.
Okay. What in your mind is really plausible? You know, and again, set aside this sort of, I don't mean to say science fiction, but these projections that, hey, if you can live another 40 years, you'll live another 100. But what is realistic in your mind? What's plausible? Is 90 as an average plausible? Is 100 as an average plausible?
I would say yes, it's plausible. It's just what it will require for us to get there. Because just by, you know, improving conditions and curing one disease or another, we probably will not get there easily. We have to do something with the way we age to just make slow the process itself. And then, yes, I think, yeah, people could live to an average year of 90. I think that's the most conservative estimate.
The most conservative is 90. I can't remember who I was talking to the other day who said, a friend of mine, we were talking about, of all things, the subject of aging came up, and he said he thought it was the liver that really has a 120-year lifespan, that even if we all could live into our 100 teens, the human liver just doesn't have it to go beyond around 120. Is that right or wrong?
No, I wouldn't say that the liver is really the limiting organ. It's not entirely clear what the limit is. There is some research done on people centenarians, so those people who live over 100, or there are even some people that live to 110, so they're called super centenarians. So there are very few of these individuals. So there are, you know, few examinations done on what they die of, and usually these are different causes that are pretty much similar to an average cause of death. So it's not, we don't have one single organ. I think many organs start to fall apart as we get older. So that's, again, this entire process of aging that needs to be changed, modified, so that we could live longer. We cannot just pick one, let's improve the liver and that would solve it.
Okay. But you are, in many ways with your own research, you are targeting cancer as an ailment. Are you working on other ailments or looking at other ailments that impact our lifespan?
Yes, absolutely. So in the case of naked mole rat, cancer was just something that was easy. It was on the surface, so that's something that was easier for us to identify because, well, you have this amazing animal that lives so long. It seems to be resistant to most diseases, so we just had to start with something. But we are also pursuing other projects with naked mole rats, looking at overall what increases their chances of living longer, even independent of cancer.
Okay. Jake writes to the program. Let me get Jake's comment. He says, I'm with your guest. Naked mole rats are cute. Cancer and he says that cancer and abnormal disease aside, how much is known about how the brain ages? I, for one, would rather have 70 years of life with a sharp mind than 80, 90, or even 200 if mental faculties decline.
Oh, well, thank you for appreciating the beauty of naked mole rats. I think they definitely have inner beauty. So to brain aging, I think it's extremely important. Yeah, nobody wants to be around for a long time and, you know, lose his mind or his cognitive abilities. There is huge variability among individuals. So Alzheimer is obviously a disease. So there are some people who live to age of 100 and beyond and have perfectly clear mind. So dementia is not an inevitable part of aging. Absolutely not. So we want people to live longer and be as sharp as, you know, 30-year-olds.
But how now? Because it seems to me that, and maybe I'm wrong with this, give me a little history lesson. I would think that when the average human lifespan was 50, 60, many people died before dementia set in, I would think. Is that wrong?
Yes, but people were dying from, violent deaths or injuries. No,
certainly, but not really brain dementia related at the time.
Right.
For the most part. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. And now we have extended the lifespan to a point where we all have to at least think about that as a possibility. So what to you as a researcher stands out as how to go about targeting the brain, changing that?
Well, I would put brain together with other age-related diseases. I think if we can address the cause, so then we can slow down liver aging and heart aging, and same about brain aging. So we are also looking in the naked mole rat. They seem to be resistant to, for example, forming plaques in the brain. And we published a paper last year that Alzheimer's disease and several other neurodegenerative diseases start from bad proteins making aggregates in the brain that kind of clog the cells and kill them eventually. So those bad proteins can arise from, you know, various causes, but one of them would be cells just making mistakes when producing proteins. So naked mole rats tend to be very, very accurate when making proteins, which again would protect them from brain aging. So there are many directions, and I wouldn't put brain. I mean, obviously brain is extremely important to us as humans because that's what, you know, very special about our species. But I think aging would, encompass that.
Okay. When you talk about proteins, though, and making bad proteins, for example, sort of the way you described what happens to us as our brains age, that's just a function of the brain getting older and starting to wear down in its effectiveness in producing these proteins? Is that right?
Well, so cells always have to deal with proteins that are not folded correctly or proteins that are misproduced. And usually when we are young, our cells are pretty good at just clearing those aggregates and clumps. But then again, not in everybody, it's not inevitable, but in some people, as they get older, those clumps aggregate, make plaques, and then eventually kill brain cells.
Just because of age, or are there other factors that are causing the brain to start to fail?
Well, age is a very important factor. Well, there is a genetic factor, of course, so there are some people in these people, the proteins are much more prone to making clumps. So again, the cells are having harder time to clear them away. But again, it all works very nicely while we are young. So age is extremely important. If we could return our cells the same ability of, you know, clearing those bad proteins when we are young, or not making them at the first place, like what we see in the naked mole rat, so that would give us a significant improvement.
We're talking to Dr. Vera Gorbunova, who is one of the, not only the really good researchers and scientists at the University of Rochester, but they're such good communicators. And they communicate what they do in a way that even the host of this program can understand. On Twitter, Dave says, the naked mole rat is not the ugliest thing on earth. This house in Williamson is. And it's waving a Confederate flag. Dave, I'm going to agree with you on that. We're going to take a short break. We're going to come back. Jack, Alicia, Mark, we've got your questions teed up. We'll get to those as we talk to Dr. Gorbunova, who is presenting tonight at the Rochester Museum and Science Center at 7:30. Her presentation called Aging Research in Search of the Fountain of Youth. It's part of their Science on the Edge speaker series, and you can check it out tonight at 7:30. Right back with Dr. Gorbunova. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on the next Connections. First hour, clergy on patrol. Rochester's clergy are going back on patrol this summer. It's a community outreach effort aimed at helping neighborhoods and improving police-community relationships, among other things. We'll talk to the people involved. Second hour, we're talking about the loss of 350 jobs, SentrySafe leaving, the impact. Join the conversation Thursday.
The data breach of the federal government's personnel files leaves workers worried and angry with their employer.
They have really done an exceptionally poor job of dealing with this and certainly have been rather callous with regard to the impact on employees.
The aftermath of a massive hack, later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4.
Welcome back to Connections. It is a short break. Dr. Gorbunov and I almost talked right into this program. I didn't mean to interrupt you. You were just saying, what have we missed that you said you wanted to make sure we talk about?
Oh, yeah. So we were just discussing aging research in general mm-hmm. and the role it plays in the University of Rochester. So we are really focusing on it. And we formed the Aging Research Center, where there are many other scientists that are interested in finding ways to extend the lifespan and understand what determines aging. So again, I think that's really something of the future. It's extremely important direction, and it will become more and more important. And that's what we are doing here.
We've been talking about your research. What are your colleagues doing right now that we ought to know about?
There are many ways. So people study proteins that may control the rate of aging or deterioration of certain organs. We use naked mole rats, mice, human cells. For example, Dirk Bowman uses Drosophila flies, fruit flies, to understand how to make them live longer and then apply this knowledge to humans. And there are many more researchers choosing, each one a different approach, but to the same goal of changing lifespan.
On Twitter, Mark wants to know about heart disease, wants to know if naked mole rats get heart disease and if their diet can tell us anything about what the human diet should be.
Yeah, no, thank you for that question, because, yeah, that's another research direction. So we collaborate, my colleague Andriy Siluyanov, myself, and Paul Brooks, who is also professor at the UFR, who specializes on heart disease. So we studied, how resistant are naked mole rats to, for example, myocardial infarction. So what we find, they are much more resistant than mice. So there is they hold a secret there, and we hope to identify what makes them so resistant to myocardial infarction, and hopefully that's something that humans could use.
Microcardial infarction is the term?
Infarction, basically.
Is that a heart attack?
It's a heart attack.
So they don't get heart attacks either?
No, they don't. And let's say if they do, so the damage would be a lot smaller than you would see in a mouse, for example.
But again, in that way, Mark was asking about diet.
Diet, yes.
I don't know how much we can sort of compare what a naked mole rat eats, but is diet a question for you to consider there?
Well, it's important for humans, of course. I would say if we compare species, for example, mouse versus naked mole rat, so we feed our naked mole rats with vegetables. We are buying them at Wegmans. So it's a healthy diet of mix of fruits and vegetables. But mice are usually fed normal laboratory diet. So you may argue that naked mole rat diet is healthier. But even if you take a mouse, and people did such experiments, and feed it fruits and vegetables, it will not live to 30 years. I can assure you about that.
This has been studied.
Yes, of course. So mice were put on all sorts of diets, and some diets are more beneficial than others. But you can get a maximum of, maybe 10, 30%, maybe 50% lifespan extension at the most. But you will not make a mouse live 10 times longer just by changing the diet.
Does that have any application to humans? in your mind?
Oh, yes, absolutely. So what researchers found using mice and using other laboratory organisms like fruit flies or worms, that if you restrict the diet, so still maintaining healthy nutrients, but just feed them less, you can significantly extend lifespan. Of course, the extension would vary. So in flies and worms, you can make them live, you know, two times, three times longer. In mice, it would be, you know, maybe 20-30%. But still thinking of human lifespan, if instead of 80 years, you know, people live to 90 or 100, that's very significant. So the problem, of course, with dietary restriction is that to achieve that lifespan extension in mice, their diet has to be cut quite significantly, and it's just not sustainable to humans. So right now what aging researchers are doing is looking for some kind of drugs or modification in the diet that would make our bodies think that we are restricted, but at the same time we could still enjoy our meals.
Alex has a question about nanotechnology. I don't know if this is your area, but Alex just wants to know if nanotechnology is one of the factors that will prevent aging in the future.
Well, we don't know. It's possible. So there are some very interesting developments, mostly in gene therapy, because if we find gene modifications, and again, we are not there yet, but if, let's say, there is a gene modification that's found to be very desirable, so of course there is a big question how to deliver it, and possibly nanotechnology could help it. But there are, you know, gene therapy is a very large field, and people are working on it, but using nanoparticles is one direction, and yeah, who knows, it may be helpful.
Some of the comments about how long you would want to live if you could. Alex on Twitter says, oh my gosh, absolutely I would take 100 or 200. There is so much to see and do, I would take 500 years if I could. Imagine the changes you would witness. But Trish writes to us, God no, would not want to live to 150 or 200 years. Jeff writes to us that his concern about aging is population control. Now, Dr. Gorbanova mentioned birth rates earlier. We can recircle that in just a moment. But Jeff says, why are we so afraid of death? It's a natural part of life.
Well, it's been a natural part of life for as long as humans existed. I tend to look at aging as a disease, because still there is misery coming with the inability to function as you used to, losing all those abilities, you know, physical, mental. So if we classify aging as a disease, so that is something we can now fight, that's something we can find a cure for. Again, I'm not talking about immortality. This is more of science fiction, but at least making people live longer and stay healthy until their last days, that I think is a worthy goal.
You wouldn't categorize yourself as someone who's afraid of death, though, because Jeff's sort of putting words in the mouth of, you know, I don't think it's about being afraid of death necessarily.
No, I don't. When I'm doing my research, to be honest with you, I'm not really thinking about me personally. I'm thinking that it's a very important biological problem. But, you know, when your loved ones or, you know, your friends' loved ones pass away, this is something that you start thinking about. What if we could make, you know, your grandma live another 10 or 20 years and be healthy? Who wouldn't want that?
And on the question of birth rates, when Jeff says he's concerned about population control, that's been a concern that a lot of people have raised in recent years when we talk about climate change, for example. And we know that birth rates in Africa and in underdeveloped countries, especially where women are not educated and treated with equality or ostensible equality, we know birth rates are higher there. But you've said birth rates in developed countries are lower now.
Yes, so many developed countries now have negative population growth, which is a huge concern for Social Security if there are no young people who can work and there are too many people that are retired. It's a huge issue. So many developed nations are actually trying to encourage their citizens to have more children these days. But the same problem could be approached by just extending productive life of people, and I think we have to do both. So no, I'm not concerned with population control. I think it's more the opposite. that we have to really make our older part of the population to be more engaged and capable of being productive for longer.
Dr. Vera Gorbunova is my guest, who is a professor of biology at the University of Rochester, and her work focuses on aging. You call yourself an anti-aging researcher or an aging researcher? How do you describe it?
Well, I would say aging researcher, but this is just semantics. Well, we just want to understand how aging
yes.
works, and then I could call myself longevity researcher, because that's what we ultimately want to achieve.
Sure. And I don't know if you can answer this one, but Courtney writes to the program and says, my uncle had ALS. Any progress in fighting ALS?
Well, it's not something that we specifically
right.
work on. But there are many issues, there are many diseases that become more prevalent as we age. So what our hope is that if we can slow the process of aging, so then even those people who may be genetically predisposed to diseases like ALS, but we could postpone the onset of the disease.
Paul writes to us, your guest mentioned antibiotics, which have unfortunately had some unintended consequences. He writes that antibiotics have created what we call superbugs, which are its own category of problem. Are there unintended consequences with the research he's doing, and are you concerned about that? Paul wants to know.
Well, I think these are very different sort of types of problem. Talking of antibiotics, people used to die, you know, just from, you know, a child gets a sore throat, and then the chance of him, you know, ear infection of dying was extremely high in, you know, 200 years ago. So now, although we talk a lot about those superbugs, but we're nowhere near to what it used to be. We are so much better off, and number of people dying from bacterial infections in developed world is just so low. So I don't see it as a major problem. I think antibiotics were extremely beneficial to society as a whole. We just need to learn how to use them properly now, but we are still so much better off than we used to be. So the same for aging research. I think if we can find a way to control aging the same way we can control bacterial infections, we would be so much better off.
Well, I look at the question as almost impossible to answer anyway. If your research is successful, and I think that's not a fair way to describe it. Your research has already been successful. If it yields the kind of results that you might envision or hope for, who knows what some of the unintended consequences are. But with antibiotics, for example, yes, maybe we've created some resilient strains of bugs and we're learning how to deal with that. That still beats a world where a knee scrape could lead to amputation or a cough could lead to death.
Yes, that I agree with that. That's what exactly what I was trying to say. So I don't see any sort of unintended consequences to that. I think ultimately what we are doing is we are trying to rid humanity of diseases of age, and then if people live longer at the same time, it's wonderful. I think almost everyone wants to live longer.
And Alicia wants to know if naked mole rats get Alzheimer's disease.
Well, so there was some research into that. So people looked at the brains of very old naked mole rats that died, and they didn't find plaques and tangles like were found in Alzheimer's disease patients, which suggests that they are resistant to this disease as well.
Is there anything that naked mole rats get?
Well, they have, sometimes they fight for dominance in their colony, so that's the most frequent cause of death we have.
Attitude adjustment issues. But really, in terms of regular disease, there is no category for this animal.
No, absolutely not. That's what's amazing about this species, and that's why we think there are many more secrets we can uncover by studying naked mole rats, given, you know, that we can put enough effort and have enough funding to do that. I think that there is a huge potential for discovery.
Let me extend off Alicia's question then about, she's asking if naked mole rats get Alzheimer's. Jake asked earlier this hour about the aging of the brain, and we've talked a little bit about that, but how optimistic are you about progress we've seen in dealing with, just take Alzheimer's specifically, how optimistic are you?
Well, I am optimistic that we can find, I should say here that my group is not focusing specifically on Alzheimer's. We're looking at aging in general, but overall, I think we can get useful information from naked mole rats because, again, they are resistant to this disease, and hopefully we can apply this knowledge to humans. So, you know, as close as we got in our research to the question of Alzheimer was the finding that naked mole rat cells are very accurate in making proteins. So right now we are collaborating with structural cryo-EM researchers that Joachim Frank in New York. So he's looking at this cellular machine called ribosome that makes proteins. So we're determining the structure of this ribosome in the naked mole rat to understand what makes it so accurate. So maybe once we understand that, you know, maybe then we could come up with some ways how to improve human ribosome so it makes fewer mistakes, although it's, you know, far in the future.
If you're just joining us, the reason we're talking about naked mole rats, and if that's a creature you've never heard of, it's worth looking up because it has been such a research star for the University of Rochester and researchers like Dr. Vera Gorbanova, my guest this hour, in that this is an animal that, if the average mouse lives 2 to 4 years, the naked mole rat lives more than 20 and can live to the age of 32, does not get cancer, does not get major disease, does not really get heart disease, and that those kind of questions about why might lead to answers about how to stave off or prevent those kind of illnesses or ailments in humans. It is a fascinating line of research. And naked mole rats, of course, are not humans, but Dr. Gorbanova is saying there are enough reasons to think that we can find parallels. That's why you don't go to necessarily the animals in the animal kingdom that live the longest and just study them because they may be too far apart from humans, I guess. Is that?
Well, we are trying to limit. Well, there are many fascinating animals that are very long-lived. Like there are certain clams that live to 400 years, but this would be very far from humans. So we limit ourselves to studying mammals. Mm-hmm. And among mammals, we have several species that are very long-lived. So we talked a lot about naked mole rat. More recently, we started researching bowhead whales. So bowhead whale, what was documented that they can live over 200 years. So there was one whale that was precisely dated that it lived at least 211 years. So this is a long time. And we have cells from these whales. Of course, we cannot keep whales at the University of Rochester, but we have cell cultures, and we study these cells trying to understand the secrets of longevity of these animals.
I've heard lobsters can go 150-plus if they're in good condition and are not harvested, et cetera?
Yes, yeah, that's true as well. But again, yeah, lobsters are...
Not
in the family. Yeah. Although, I mean, fascinating. So someone should definitely study them. But yeah, my group and my collaborator, Dr. Andriy Siluanov, so we are focusing on mammals that live for a long time.
So whales, and I was going to ask if any other mammals are in the category that you're studying right now.
Well, so now it's mostly, whales and rodents. So bats are extremely interesting as well. So there are some bats. So the brant bat, it's so small, it's like almost your fingertip size, and it can live to 40 years, which again is amazing and something worth studying. But all this requires funding, and we don't work on bats at present, but I would say it's something very interesting.
Let me grab a phone call, and this is Ed in Rochester. Go ahead, Ed.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Ed.
Hello?
Yes.
I had a question about the professor's research and what effect would it have on if it was better funded, what effect would it have on the $3 trillion health bill that the United States has?
Pardon me.
Yeah, can you ask the question again, Ed? Can you rephrase?
I just want to know how much money could a research save the United States health bill of $3 trillion?
Oh, I see what you're asking. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for this question. I think that's a very important point, because a huge amount of money is spent to care for people in the last years of their life. So huge, huge bills, because people tend to be healthy when they're young, and then I would say, 5 years before,
yeah,
2 years before.
Yeah, but what type of dollar figure are you talking about?
Well, I'm not really prepared to talk, economics,
the health bill is like $3 trillion this year.
Well, but, imagine
I remember when it was 2, 3, 4 years ago, it was like of $1.5 trillion. So where is it going?
Well, but imagine that if people were not going through this stage of very severe disability before they die. So I think from economic estimates, like most of the cost of healthcare is collapsed towards these last 2 or 3 years of life. So what we are trying to achieve here is to rid people of age-related disease. So this way, I think the savings could be tremendous.
Okay. That puts a couple different questions or thoughts in my brain. I don't know if this figure is right. I hear a lot that 90% of our lifetime's medical bills happen in the last 10% of our lives or something. Anyway, it is heavily weighted toward the end. But I'm still trying to make sure I understand. Certainly, when Dr. Gorbunova says if we can eliminate a lot of these age-related diseases, that could cure up a lot of the medical bills that Ed is talking about, $3 trillion, whatever figure you have, certainly. But how are we dying then? I mean, in this world where age-related disease has been addressed in many of these ways, there still has to be some sort of a medical and death process that has a bill on it.
Well, yes, but if you look at centenarians, so those lucky people that live to 100 and over, so many of them stay very healthy almost to the very end. So that's, these people stay out of nursing homes, they're independent. I watched once a TV series about a lady that she was a school teacher in New York City and she worked like almost till she was age 100. So if we could achieve that, not just for very, very rare few, but if majority of the population could enjoy that health, so then, I think there would be a big saving. Yeah, well, they still die. But they do not go through this very prolonged period of disability.
That's the vision. That's the goal.
Yes.
Okay. Because Amy writes to us, and this piggybacks well off of Amy's email. Why extend life if the quality of life is not going to be any better? And again, I think maybe we just addressed that, Amy, but I think she's envisioning, Dr. Gorbunova, I think Amy is envisioning if we live to 150, the last 40 to 60 years being frail, not as sharp, and you're saying that's not the vision.
Yes, that's actually a misconception that we are trying to fight and educate people as much as possible that the goal of aging research is not to extend disabilities, to extend healthy life. So if people could live to 150 and having the body of like 30-year-old or 40-year-old, so that's the goal.
And to Ed's point on cost, how much is cancer alone costing this country? When you think about medical bills, the government's bills, if you just targeted cancer, I mean, I don't have that number. I'm sure you don't have that number offhand, but it's a huge bill.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, and so, so you're getting a sense of the possible benefits. For Dr. Vera Gorbunova, professor of biology at the University of Rochester, speaking tonight at 7:30 at the Rochester Museum and Science Center. Her presentation, Aging Research in Search of the Fountain of Youth. And you want to give us a little bit more about what you'll be talking about tonight?
Well, I will talk about our approach to aging research, how we study long-lived species, trying to find those secrets of long life. I will also talk about biology of aging in general, what determines why some species are short-lived and others long-lived. So I'll be explaining, from evolutionary point of view, what determines lifespan, how that evolved, and how this understanding could help us change human lifespan.
Can you give us one little kind of snippet on comparing species, the short-lived ones? What's a lesson that we've learned on some species are shorter-lived?
Again, from evolutionary perspective, that means they don't benefit from longer life. Let's say they have many threats, many predators. So we can learn important things from them, but we may not learn that much about longevity. So I think the most interesting species are those that live for a very long time, like, say, naked mole rats or whales that we discussed here. So they evolved mechanisms of long life, their genes, their proteins, they make us specially selected to last longer. So this is what we are trying to understand and then find ways to bring it to human benefit.
Let me wrap with this. This is so personal to so many people because, we all are going to age and and die eventually. And so many of us have seen family members go through cancer, Alzheimer's, other ailments. And so in this kind of research, is it personal to you? Do you sort of disaffect yourself as a scientist from that? Or is there a personal component to you?
Well, I'm trying to separate those two because, well, of course, we think about aging and death in a personal way. But when I'm doing my research, it's not that, you know, I'm hoping to extend my own lifespan. I'm just trying to understand this scientific question, and then I hope that it will help many people.
And what has been the biggest obstacle? Is it funding?
Yes. It's definitely the greatest limiting factor in expanding research on aging, because we discuss this question a lot. Is like, well, is it worth it? You know, are we extending disability? And this is so important, and politicians don't get it yet, because if you look at funding of research in Europe, so they already understood, so they have population decline, they have many old people, so they specifically invest in aging research. Unfortunately, in the United States, we are not there yet. So there is a lot of support for disease-specific research, but it's not, you know, policymakers don't yet really understand and embrace the idea that aging research is something that encompasses all those diseases, and that's something we need to concentrate on.
It's not about avoiding death. It's about quality of life all the way through and finding the longevity that we're capable of. That's what we've learned this hour from Dr. Vera Gorbanova, professor of biology at the University of Rochester. Tonight, 7:30 at the Rochester Museum and Science Center, she will be presenting on this subject and more. It's part of their Science on the Edge speaker series. Tickets are available, and you can jump on the Rochester Museum and Science Center website for that. Dr. Gorbanova, I always enjoyed the conversation, and I even have more appreciation for your naked mole rats after this hour.
Thank you, and thanks for having me.
Thank you very much. Thanks for listening. Our thanks to Val LaBanca, our engineer, Caitlin Madison, intern extraordinaire. Our thanks to Barsook Records and Ra Ra Riot for the music. I'm Evan Dawson, and this is member-supported public radio.